дорогим сладким. You're listening to Industrial Evolution, where we're exploring how industrial enterprise leaders can use emerging technologies to stay competitive. I'm your host, Chad Perry, CTO, software engineer, and digital strategy expert, and I'm interviewing the most innovative companies in the world to reveal the future of how we make, grow, move, and power things. These are the pioneers who are shaping the future of manufacturing, agriculture, transportation, energy, and every other industrial sector. In each episode, we're looking at key technologies, state of the market, the challenges of adopting technology into an organization, and success stories of early adopters who have been able to revolutionize their business on the back of these innovations. You can find more episodes and guest information on our website, evolution.industrial.fm. Enjoy the show. Today, we're speaking with Davey Brown, CTO and VP of Industrial Solutions at TE Connectivity out of Zurich, Switzerland. If you've never heard of them before, that's okay, because TE is one of those companies that sits quietly in the background, but actually enables much of the physical world around us with connectivity and sensor products built for harsh environments. Because TE sits on the physical side of Industry 4.0, the demand for their products very much reflects the changing nature of industrial productivity. So that's exactly what Davey is here to discuss with us. As a CTO, Davey's job is to understand the needs of his industrial customers, both today and tomorrow, and to make sure that TE is delivering the future, so to speak. In fact, one of the key themes Davey has seen over the past 20 years is two waves of heightened focus on automation. The first coming after the 2008 global recession, and the second just over a decade later in response to the current global pandemic. The bad news is the landscape is becoming hyper-competitive, but the good news is there are more opportunities than ever before to reduce cost and introduce new streams of revenue, which Davey is going to shed some light on for us. So Davey, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks, Chad, and it's good to be here with you today.
Now, before we dive into this, can you give me a little bit more context on your background and how you arrived at a leadership position with TE?
Sure. So I first joined TE Connectivity in 2013. At that stage, I joined as a CTO for the telecom and ultimately the broadband connectivity solutions business. Prior to that, I've had leadership roles in a variety of technologies, including consumer electronics, in the software industry, in video, and going right back to the start of my career, where I started in research and signal processing.
TE has gone through a couple of different evolutions as a business. Now, at this point, it's a global business. Now, you've had a variety of leadership roles in other large organizations as well. So can you give me a little bit more background on how you ended up leading such a large organization, especially dealing with hardware, when some of your background is also to do with software?
My background has been software and electronics. A lot of my background was in communications, which is also a lot around connectivity. There's actually, when you look at it, there's a pretty fine line between connection technology and software and the hardware and underlying physical systems required to enable it. So it was actually a relatively straightforward transition for me from software and electronics and systems into my first role here at TE Connectivity. TE has always been around providing highly engineered solutions to our customers to provide those connectivity and sensing solutions you spoke about at the introduction, and that has never changed.
Okay, so let's go back to something I mentioned in the intro. You characterized, in our last conversation, you characterized Industry 4.0 by two waves of automation in the last two decades, where the first one was more about cost control and the second is now more about speed and flexibility. So can you take me back to 2008 and describe what has happened since then from your perspective?
If I go back and talk about 2008, obviously as the world was coming through a global recession, here at TE, we saw a trend, and we saw a trend towards an increased investment in automation by our industrial customers. So as we came through the recession, companies were investing in increased automation as they rebuilt. And one of the things that we saw back then was a lot of that focus was around lowering the cost of manufacturing operations. And what's interesting now as we are dealing with this global pandemic is that we're starting to see, and we expect to continue to see, a new wave of investment in automation. But this time, the automation is going to be somewhat different. Automation has become much more complicated, much more capable over the last 12 years. And I think increasingly that automation has become much more flexible. So we are now looking at a new wave here. We expect to see an increased investment in automation, but around very flexible automation to respond to what, as we all know, is a very rapidly changing world.
Right. And you describe these as waves, but we both know that these things happen slowly and then all of a sudden, right? So it's not like we just now got all these capabilities. These capabilities have been growing and becoming more widely available really over just since the Industrial Revolution. I mean, you can go all the way back through human history if you want to crawl up that far. But in terms of these two waves of automation, it seems like what happened was the internet came of age and matured. And so there was an opportunity to, and that spurred a lot of software development. And so there was an opportunity to improve operations, which can be done a lot with software. But now we're actually seeing the benefits of that spur this second wave, where it's more about the physical world. So does that make sense, or am I off here? Because I feel like I see things like companies like SpaceX, and I see a lot more push and emphasis on the physical world.
To build highly reliable, highly capable systems requires software and, of course, highly engineered solutions at the physical layer. And that is something that, as I said, has never changed and will continue to be a requirement that will have to evolve hand in hand. You're right that there has been, I suppose, a slightly different wave of investment around software and controls to give greater visibility into our factories. And of course, this comes under the umbrella of Industry 4.0. One thing I would say is that Industry 4.0 is becoming very, very real. And as I look at the trends that we see now, as we, you know, as we come through this pandemic and we look into an increased investment in flexible automation, what was talked about in Industry 4.0 is now the technology that really will drive a new wave and increased flexibility in automation and manufacturing. So I think a lot of it is taking the fluff and taking what's been talked about over the years and making it very, very real. I think, to be clear on automation, if we go back and think about that, of course, it's nothing new. I mean, robotics has been around since the 1930s. There's been a number of waves of increase through robotics, but those have really tended to be driven by technology advances. We saw an increase in the use of robotics and automation in the 1970s. We saw an increase then as we moved from hydraulic actuation into electrical actuation. So again, technology advances making robotics either more precise, more capable, etc. But 2008 was a little bit different, because as we came through that recession, there were conscious decisions now to invest in automation and robotics based on a need, as opposed to adopting the latest wave of technology.
That need was driven by multiple factors, as it is now. And one of those factors that you had touched on in our previous conversation was, and this gets back to the flexibility of manufacturing, was talking about moving manufacturing closer to the point of consumption, which has some trade-offs, because you move into higher cost jurisdictions and therefore you need automation. So you have to be able to support that with an investment.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, automation has always been something that's been talked about as enabling manufacturing in higher cost locations. But certainly nobody wants to be disrupted ever again the way that manufacturing has been through this pandemic. So absolutely, one of the things that automation gives us is the ability to manufacture cost effectively, regardless of location. The 2008 recovery was a lot, in my opinion, around reducing the cost of manufacturing. What I think now, as we look at the type of manufacturing capability that our customers are designing and deploying, a lot of that's around flexibility. And what I mean by that is, We are responding to a world where demands are changing very, very rapidly. So investments in very static, fixed functionality automation is perceived as very risky. However, investments in flexible automation, particularly robotic automation, which can be very quickly reconfigured, is what I see as driving this next wave. I would say an important part of a change as well between, call it 2008 and today, is the subtle shift in robotics from traditional robotics and articulated robots into cobots. Cobots have been around, I suppose, in the mid to late 90s, but we've really seen growth in the cobot segment over approximately the last 10 years. And, you know, very simply, cobots are a class of robot which will work in close proximity and collaboratively with human operators. This requires a huge amount of sensing capability and safety capability, but it does allow cobots to work in a very different way to how we've used robotics in the past. It certainly improves more flexibility, makes them faster to deploy, faster to commission, and faster to program. So that second trend that I see as we look at automation between that 2008 timeframe and today is much more focus around the use of cobots.
Yeah, and so you're describing very much what you set out in the beginning, which was it is about speed, both speed and flexibility. So the flexibility is driving this physical demand for a different physical infrastructure. And you see that at the trade shows. You see that in things like the containerized manufacturing lines that can be deployed anywhere within a relatively short amount of time. And then on the other side of that, it still is about cost control, but it's about cost control in the sense that we can now take advantage of the new robots, the new sensing capabilities to speed up our operations, but also I would think to make them flexible as well.
When we think about robots, one of the things about an investment in flexible robotics is the ability for you to carry forward that investment to manufacture completely different products. I mean, across our manufacturing network here at TE, I can think of several instances where we can very rapidly reconfigure our manufacturing based on highly automated lines. So that is an example of where this flexibility and responding to these rapidly changing demands is enabled by advanced technology like cobots. And it has changed. As I look around our manufacturing within TE and visit our customers, the use of cobots has changed the landscape and the look of manufacturing facilities. Less, huge robots, behind safety screens, in cages, etc., and much more use of cobots alongside human operators. It's a really great way to free up some of the dangerous or repetitive tasks that human operators are doing, and allow our human operators to work on more thoughtful jobs or things that require critical thinking or more management and engineering skills. So I do see that trend as we see this shift from that sort of fairly fixed function and traditional articulated robots into a much more collaborative and highly sensorized cobot.
And there's another perspective to this, which we haven't talked about yet, and that is sustainability. So how much does that actually factor into this?
Sustainability is an interesting topic to talk about here, as we've all dealt with the global pandemic. Consumers seem to have become an awful lot more conscious around sustainability during this time. I've certainly seen people thinking, I want to shop and buy more locally. I want to cut down on the environment that I'm having on the carbon or CO2 emissions around the globe. I mean, very interestingly, since the pandemic, we've seen about an 8% decrease in global energy-related CO2 emissions. And that's the lowest level that it's been in a decade. And that's getting people's attention. So there's no doubt about it that producers, manufacturers globally are responding to the requests from our customers and from their customers, to be very mindful around manufacturing technology and seeking to reduce CO2 emissions.
I wouldn't say that it's surprising, but it's interesting that this trend that you see definitely at the consumer level, at the end consumer level, so we're not talking about B2B or manufacturing businesses, seems to be carrying over into the B2B world. But surely there has to be a cost benefit to that as well, or some sort of long-term benefit?
Yeah, I mean, there's multiple parts. If we think about, the benefits around sustainability, we talked about that reduction in CO2 emissions. Well, part of that really has been through the simplification of a lot of supply chains. We've certainly been forced to modify and adapt supply chains in a number of industries. A lot of that's been based on, obviously, challenges brought to us by the pandemic, inability for operators to come into manufacturing in certain geographies, and certainly moving products across the borders have become increasingly difficult over the last 6 months. So I do feel that that localized supply chain and access to more raw materials from a local supply chain is a trend that will continue. That's, again, goes back to automation, especially if you're standing up that sort of manufacturing high cost. That does require a level of automation, and therefore I do see automation leading to localized manufacturing, leading to improved sustainability.
Now, I have a few more questions around this, and I want to talk about some of your technical innovations, but I need to get a better sense of who your actual customer is, because TE sits in the background. You have customers all over the world, but you're just your typical manufacturing company. So can you tell me a little bit about who you're exactly serving and how they've responded to this second wave of automation?
If we talk about automation in particular, it's just one of the markets that we serve, of course. But if I focus in on that for a minute, our customers are companies that are making all types of automation products, which includes robotics, drives, machine tools, equipment for packaging, equipment for printing. Those are all markets that we've served traditionally. Increasingly, we're seeing our products going into more automated agriculture machinery, construction, medical, chemical production, shipbuilding. It's almost an endless range, but our customers for our industrial products are the companies that make the equipment that go in to serve those industries.
The decision makers that are coming to you, do you get a sense of what those conversations look like and how they've changed over the past maybe 12 months or definitely the past 8 months?
Over the last number of months, again, it does come down to confidence and assurance of supply. One of the things that's always been part of our strategy here at TE is a regionally focused model for our manufacturing. We've always positioned our manufacturing capability close to our customers, close to our point of consumption. And that's certainly something which has been a strength to us over the last number of months. Alongside that, we work closely with our customers. Our engineers work with our customers' engineers and seek to co-design optimal solutions. So again, because of our proximity to our customers, we have been able to continue to work side by side with their engineers and solve their problems without having to take on a lot of international travel. So one of the things our customers really have been looking at us for has been that strong partnership and that confidence that we're able to provide the products that they require to produce their solutions regionally as far as possible.
Yeah, and I'm sure having the domain experience of manufacturing your own products helps you in dealing with customers who are then going through the same organizational challenges.
It does. And, you know, being a large manufacturer and also a provider of solutions into large manufacturers does give us a very unique perspective. So the sort of trends that I've spoken about already around automation, around more localization of manufacturing, are exactly what we see within our own manufacturing environment across TE. Interestingly, I talked a little bit about cobots, and that's certainly a trend that I very rarely visit one of our manufacturing locations now and don't see multiple cobots in use working side by side with our human operators. The other thing that I would say is a trend that we see across our manufacturing environment here at TE is digital manufacturing and our digital factory initiatives. So increasingly, the widespread use of advanced sensing to understand the operation of our equipment and to be able to predict failures in our manufacturing equipment before they actually happen. So again, a great example there of Industry 4.0, where this IIoT and this mass proliferation of sensors certainly give us visibility into the manufacturing processes in our factories, but now we're able to take that data and actually make meaningful decisions. That's exactly what our customers are doing. And therefore, when we think about the needs of our customers are looking for highly accurate sensing solutions to use to monitor their manufacturing environments, but also importantly, highly reliable connectivity solutions. And I'll just talk about two of those things for a moment. I've talked a lot about robotics here today because it is a huge trend. But most robotics are must-not-fail applications. In other words, when you're putting together a robotic solution, often it's a one-off. It's not very often there's a standby or two or three standbys. So these are highly critical pieces of equipment that cannot fail. An important part of that cannot fail is the connectivity, both supplying control to a robotic system and then moving power and data throughout the articulated joints of a robotic system. Our connectivity solutions have been designed to deal with these very harsh environments and enable ongoing and reliable operation in a robotic environment. The second part that's important in robotics, again, around connectivity is safety. And I talked about cobots and how they can work collaboratively and close to human operators. To do that, you need very reliable sensing capability. And an important part of that is not only the sensors, but also the connectivity into those sensors to make sure that in the event of a human operator coming too close or perhaps coming into contact with the robot, that the robot can be stopped immediately to prevent any harm to the human operator. But then the last part, if I talk about that connectivity and that trend in our customers, as customers start to build more confidence in the use of sensor technology in an IIoT configuration to really understand the workings of the equipment in their factories, they need to deploy a huge amount of sensors very quickly across their factory environment. A couple of things that come into play there and that we think is a trend here. Number one is being able to deploy the sensing capability very rapidly. And we've been providing very reliable connectivity solutions into the manufacturing and industrial space for many years. But a recent innovation that we've brought to market is our M12 field installable connector plug. And our field installable products allow very, very rapid termination and deployment of connectivity solutions in a factory environment. Our M12 field installable plug, which we brought to market recently, has got only two pieces. There's only two components to it, so there are no tricky small screws to drop into an awkward place when you're under pressure trying to install in a factory environment. And this is a product that with only two parts can provide up to 10 gigabits of connectivity on either IP67 or IP68 environmental ceiling. So just one example really of that connectivity and the importance of that connectivity to deploy sensing and actuation capabilities across a rapidly changing industrial environment.
We have software, we have data. That's been a thing for a long time. But moving into the physical world, you have to be able to reliably move that data. You have to be able to reliably get data out of the system. And so what I've heard you describe, along with benefits like safety, are fast, easy connectivity, faster deployment of sensors, and overall lowering risk. So if I'm an organizational leader and I'm thinking about this, like I'm thinking about it in terms of risk, I'm curious what your connectivity solutions looked like before. I mean, why is it such a big deal? Why did it take so long to get a connectivity solution that only had two parts?
We provide connectivity solutions, as I've said, across our organization into 10 very distinct end markets. We've got some of the smallest connectors produced on the surface of the earth. We've got some of the largest that go into some very, very harsh environments, either in space or at the bottom of the sea. So we've got a lot of experience in contact physics. But designing a connector which is incredibly robust, is seals from the tough environment where it's deployed, reliably carries data, and can be field installed, is a pretty tough challenge. Traditionally, a lot of the systems that I've talked about would have used connectivity solutions assembled off-site into a harness, and then that wiring harness would have to be, you know, pre-configured for the application. It would be measured and built off-site, sealed, and then brought in and then plugged into the application. That's fine if it's a very predictable application. So if you're using the same harness around an articulated joint in a robot like we spoke about, then that's possible. When we're trying to deploy sensors in a factory environment where we might need to run tens of meters back to an aggregation point, it's almost impossible to be able to assemble that off-site. So what we've got by bringing this very simple M12 field installable connectivity to market is the ability for installers to come in, reel out as much cable as they need, and very, very quickly terminate that at exactly the right length. So two very different requirements. One is that, you know, assembled off-site, creating of a very reliable harness, and then another one is that need to very quickly deploy using a field installable connector in the final factory environment.
I mean, I think about it as kind of like unrolling an Ethernet cable, right? You want to be able to just cut that. But instead of the few Ethernet cables I've made in my life weren't the most professional looking things. And I can see how if you had something that was mission critical, you have to make sure that connectivity is secure. Sure, I guess TE could send out teams of engineers to make sure, but now you're talking about higher costs and you're kind of like defeating the purpose of it.
You know, we look across our engineering community. We've got 8,000 engineers globally working on our solutions for our customers around the globe. And of course, contact physics is a really important part of creating highly reliable products that our customers can trust. It's difficult to design the perfect connector. We want a connector that's got zero insertion force and very, very high retention force. And a lot of this really comes down to understanding the unique needs of each of the markets that we provide our products into, and making sure that we have solutions which our customers can trust. And one of the benefits that we have here at TE, as I mentioned, we've got products which are at the bottom of the ocean, they're in space and everywhere in between, and the ability to transfer competence between our engineers serving everything from the automotive space to the medical space to the energy to industrial to data centers to appliances. All of these applications have got different requirements, but we've got fundamental technology that we've been able to move between these very different markets and come up with optimal solutions for our customers.
Can you give me some specific examples of what the extremes would be? So you mentioned having some of the smallest connectors and then some of the largest. I would be curious just to know what those are.
Some of the smallest connecting solutions are very, very fine pitch, sub 1 millimeter pitch headers that you would see on PCBs, and going even smaller pitch than that, the sort of socket connectors that you would use or that you would see for a processor on a motherboard. At the extreme opposite end, our products go into high reliability environments in airframes, so both in commercial air and defense applications, but also some very, very harsh environments where increasingly connectivity is required at the bottom of the seabed. So that's a very tough environment, both from a sealing perspective and also from a contact physics perspective. So very, very different requirements, but all built up by us sharing our capability across the different businesses that we serve.
How big are those connectors at the bottom of the ocean?
You can't see my hands, but they're probably 8-12 inches across are some of the largest connectors that we would manufacture. And then some of the smallest ones, you can, if you've got very good eyesight, have a look inside a computer and pop out a processor and look at the sort of connectors you see under a processor socket.
And those are two different scenarios, right? Because one is kind of, if you're talking about even at the scale of a 12-inch plug on the PCB side of it, that doesn't even classify as a connector to me in my mind. That's just some places where some pins go in.
We would definitely call that a connector. And obviously, that's critically important connectivity. You know, those applications are very difficult to when you look at the increasing size of processors today. To make a reliable contact between each of those pins or balls on the bottom of the processor requires very, very highly engineered solutions. And we would definitely call those difficult contact physics problems, but we would definitely call those connectors.
You don't want your CPU failing on your mission critical robot. It might be okay if it goes down on your PC, you can just swap that out. But now I kind of get a sense of why you're talking about this being so important.
Yeah, absolutely. I describe those sort of, you know, some of those robotic environments as they must not fail type applications. And a large part of that is not only ensuring that the connectivity is reliable, in other words, that we've got a reliable connection between the two endpoints that we're connecting, but also that we can withstand the tough environment that we're in. And that can be heat, it can be dust ingress, it can be moisture, it can be other chemicals. as well as a harsh environment that involves a lot of vibration. So all of that comes into play when we talk about delivering, connecting, and sensing solutions that can that solve the needs for our customers' toughest problems.
And one of the things you mentioned before was the resolution of technology in general, but specifically in the context of robots, that resolution and capability is improving. And of course, that enables customers to do more things in real time, what we call dynamic processing. How do your parts factor into that?
There's a lot of things that I suppose are good examples that we could talk about here. But one of the things that has come to light, and I'm sure you've read about it as well, has been how we've been able to continue, or how companies have been forced to change, I should say, some of their practices around food processing. You know, it's an environment that's been very challenging during the pandemic. In fact, I read back in May that the CDC reported 17,000 cases of COVID among workers in meat and poultry plants in the USA. And that was just in the USA. And since that, we've seen hotspots popping up around the globe in a lot of meat and food processing plants. You know, when you look at that, you can understand it. Number one, the density of workers in meat processing is about three times typical manufacturing. It's something that's very highly skilled. And the reason why, everything you're dealing with is dynamic. There's no repeatable operations whenever you're dealing with meat processing, because no two pieces that you're asked to deal with look exactly the same. Now, so being able to automate meat processing, and particularly difficult tasks like deboning, has been, you know, beyond the capabilities of automated systems until fairly recently. But as we've looked here at some of the trends around changes in manufacturing and processing during the pandemic, we are seeing companies investing more in developing the sort of solutions that can automate highly precise food processing operations like deboning. When I think about, you know, what does that mean for a company like TE? Well, first of all, to be able to carry out this sort of dynamic operation requires a lot of data and a lot of sensors. You know, it requires temperature, it requires position, it requires video, it requires pressure. So all of these sensors are required to understand exactly where a knife or a water jet is being placed as it goes through a deboning operation. And with that comes a couple of things. Number one, you can imagine an environment which is pretty tough, and we've talked about dealing with the harsh environmental conditions we find in different manufacturing. But then the second part of it is the amount of data that's required. So if you're looking at things like computer vision, you're streaming HD video to make decisions around where I should or where a cobot or a robot should position a knife or a blade. That's an awful lot of real-time machine vision and video processing, and that's an awful lot of data. So the typical control systems used on robots in the past, which were, you know, various iterations around RS-232, are no longer good enough. So when we look at it, we look at the capabilities that we require to be able to automate highly sensorized processing, we need gigabits of capability. So that trend that we see here with our products is providing not only connectivity in a harsh environment, but also much more data. And that trend will only continue as the sensors that we use in manufacturing continue to generate more and more data.
You're not just talking about a sensor or even a suite of sensors that you described. You're talking about multiple sensors that are on an articulated device that are moving in three dimensions. So that really comes right back to what you described with not only being in a harsh environment, but also having the capability to connect and stay connected in that environment.
You know, when we think about the buying decisions of our customers, we're a partner that they can trust not only to, you know, to work on solving their toughest problems, but also to deliver products that are going to stand up and deliver the sort of reliability that they require in their end applications.
So what does the strategic planning look like right now? What are the questions on people's mind when they come to TE?
It's part of a phrase that didn't exist until recently, and that is pandemic proof. Increasingly, you know, our customers are seeking to deploy pandemic proof infrastructure. And to do that, they need a pandemic proof partner. And that's something that we would certainly pride ourselves on. I talked a little bit about our strategy, which has been around for a long time, about, you know, locating our manufacturing close to our customers. And that's certainly something that I view as part of being as close to a pandemic proof partner of choice as possible. So that's something that our customers really have always looked at, which is the strength of our partnership and the reliability of the relationship. And that's something that I expect will need to continue. In terms of, you know, trends that I would see as we move through this, we've talked about automation and that change from somewhat fixed automation into flexible automation. That will continue to push increased data rates, increased connectivity, increased innovation on our side, because our customers still need us to innovate and solve their toughest problems. So for us, that will be around an increased focus on higher capability when it comes to power and higher capability when it comes to data. And that's certainly a trend that is part of creating a pandemic-proof future where we do have sufficient connectivity and reliability in our customer solutions to be able to continue to operate in the event of a pandemic or some sort of similar disruption in the future. Something else that's an interesting trend is miniaturization. You know, as we cram more and more connectivity into smaller and smaller spaces, as we look all across our businesses, we see miniaturization. And a good example of our commitment to that in the industrial market has been something called single pair Ethernet, which we recently brought to market. Single pair Ethernet uses just two wires for data and power, as opposed to the eight that you would see with a traditional Ethernet. So this is an example of where we're able to bring smaller solutions to market, which are still highly capable. And this innovation in particular, single pair Ethernet, another example of how we can help our customers very quickly and in an even smaller form factor deploy the sort of sensing they need to add increased IIoT capability to their factories of the future.
When you say pandemic proof, it's not just about a pandemic. There has been risk in the system. And I would argue that really what we're seeing is the gloves are off now. The veneer of stability is off. And especially because we're now such a globally interconnected supply chain. So when I hear pandemic proof, my first reaction is, oh yeah, of course we're responding to something near term. But that just makes good business sense. What are you seeing around the ability of your customers to make investment decisions and justify that? Are they just thinking near term, or do they understand the true long-term value of this kind of resilience?
The pandemic we're dealing with at the moment is not the only disruption that we've seen to manufacturing over the years. It's been everything from natural disasters to trade disagreements. So you're correct that there will always be some sort of interruption, but there's been certainly nothing of the scale and impact that COVID-19 has brought. So as I look to the future and I think about what our customers are looking at, they really don't want to live through this level of disruption. So, you know, planning is increasingly thinking about what happens if this comes again. What happens if it's different? What happens if we have to continue to deal with this? And what does pandemic-proof infrastructure look like? And that comes in multiple parts. I think from the supply chain perspective, it's around looking for very robust supply chains that will withstand better localized supply and less resilience, as you said, on these very complicated global supply chains with products often touching down 4, 5, 6 countries before they make it to the consumer. But I think as you zoom in inside the manufacturing environment, what does pandemic-proof manufacturing actually look like? And, that's everything from the early phase of this pandemic around the making PPE available, making sure that our workers were always safe in an environment and where they could be productive. But increasingly, that's around what does the next wave of pandemic-proof infrastructure look like in a factory environment? And we talked a little bit about cobots, but one of the things that's interesting around cobots, again, is cobots can be part of a social distancing solution. Social distancing technology just made it to the top of the Gartner hype cycle in August. It moved in there very, very quickly, and for good reason, of course. But cobots can enable increased distancing between human operators. And again, as we think to the future, we talked about that flexibility, that need to, you know, respond to rapidly changing conditions, which is what this pandemic has challenged us all with. And I do see collaborative robots and cobots being part of building that pandemic-proof infrastructure in the future. I can give you an example. One of our customers is Raymond, which is a division of Toyota Material Handling. And one of their products is actually an autonomous forklift truck. Raymond have been struggling with a connector that they need, or a connector solution for, their autonomous forklift platform. And it was actually due to the existing solution not being able to withstand the harsh environment where they're in use. So they came to us over the last number of months during the pandemic, and we were able to sit down, understand their needs, very quickly put forward solutions, including CPC, which is a circular connector, which is a very versatile, very rugged, very lightweight connector, which is part of our portfolio. We're able to specify parts of our intercontact solution, which are highly reliable connectivity products used in motor controls. And working closely with them, we were able to specify a solution. We took that from the first interaction with the customers through drawings, through first article production, and got them up and running in 5 weeks. Now, autonomous forklift production is very interesting as we look downstream because, of course, autonomous forklift production enables ongoing operation, even when human operators are unable to come to work. So it's just an example of where we've been able to mobilize our teams internally to solve a customer need during a tough time here during the pandemic. But in turn, the autonomous forklift product, which pops out at the end of this, is again part of the solution for building that sort of pandemic-proof infrastructure we just spoke about.
An automated forklift could have one of two interesting capabilities. One would be what you would think of as an automated forklift, which is just driving around doing its own thing without a human operator. But I'm curious if you see part of the future where there's still human intervention required, but we can now do things like remote operations. And of course, sensors and immersive environment have to be part of that.
So I mean, part of that pandemic proof, we talked a little bit about the basics of it, which is around social distancing and they say social distancing technology, a phrase that didn't even exist as recently as a few months ago. So absolutely, that's a change. The improved sensorization and the improved visibility of manufacturing processes enabled by Industry 4.0 is certainly part, again, of that pandemic proof environment that we've spoken about. And let me give you an example, and that's around a much talked about technology, which is predictive maintenance. You know, I remember well over 10 years ago looking at interesting solutions that through vibration sensors could predict a failure in a piece of manufacturing equipment. Now, we've seen that with the widespread use of machine learning, we've seen that become a reality. And in fact, it's a reality in many of our own manufacturing plants here at TE. But why that becomes important as we think about the future and dealing with pandemics is if we have fewer operators in our manufacturing environment, we have fewer people walking past that piece of equipment saying, that doesn't sound quite right, or that's not exactly what I expect. So sensors in this increasingly lights-off environment becomes our eyes and ears, and also the ability to predict failures in manufacturing equipment, and being able to go in safely, perhaps whenever there are fewer people in that manufacturing plant, to be able to perform essential maintenance. Again, it is somewhere where this trend has been around for a long time. Its value is very clear, but it's yet another one of these examples where COVID-19 has not necessarily changed, but accelerated a trend that was alive and well.
What you're describing is an art, right? It's the ability of somebody who's been on the factory floor for 30 years to walk by that machine and say, something doesn't sound right. So how do you make sure that you preserve that or capture that? Or is AI potentially just better?
You know, I don't know that AI is necessarily better. I think that it's a little bit different. So the first thing is, we don't necessarily think that AI in this form would replace, highly skilled workers. We expect that highly skilled workers are going to continue to be involved in manufacturing, and we don't see that changing. Even cobots, I don't see that's a replacement for human jobs today. I think it's a movement towards a more collaborated and elevated effort. We know that robots conduct repetitive tasks in difficult environments or in sanitary environments, which allows human operators to work on more thoughtful jobs, more thoughtful tasks. I do see things like AI changing a little bit and being able to look at many more things in parallel. And, a great example of this is acoustic monitoring, where one microphone in the proximity of a piece of equipment with 20 or 30 moving parts can simultaneously monitor that and determine when there's been an anomaly.
That's something that's very difficult for a human operator in a very noisy environment to be able to do. So I wouldn't necessarily say that AI replaces that. I would say that AI would supplement it.
I see technology fundamentally as being about enabling and freeing up humans to be more human, to do the things that they're good at, the things that are creative, that are more artistic. And so that's a perfect example of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there a specific customer, given everything we've talked about, that you feel like really highlights what is capable and really what is going on out there in the market as Industry 4.0 really matures and accelerates?
As I mentioned, one thing that we pride ourselves on here at TE is very close relationships with our customers. You know, we sit down every day and co-design and co-innovate with our customers to solve their toughest problems. And, you know, as we've talked about today, those problems continue to change. And as long as our customers' needs continue to change, our need to continue to innovate will never go away. There are countless things that we could talk about every day. But let me talk about one that I suppose that's fairly recent. We recently had a opportunity, or actually a problem, brought to us by Starline. And Starline is a division of Legrand, and they manufacture electrical track busway systems. So the sort of track systems that if you looked up in a data center or a manufacturing facility or assembly line or even in retail, you would see these busway systems, which have increasingly replaced the traditional conduit or pipe and wire type of systems that you would have seen for power distribution. So, you know, in the midst of the pandemic, Starline came to us. They had a need for a smaller form factor, a more configurable power distribution module. They came to us, and it was an example of where we were able to look into our rich product line. And we used a product which is actually recently redesigned, which is our Entrelec DBL product line. And we were able to work with a customer to specify that. They were able to very rapidly design that into their product. And as a result of that, we had to massively increase our production capacity. We had to actually triple our production capacity in the late summer to meet our demand for this product. So here was an example of, you know, despite some of the challenges during the pandemic, we've been able to tap into a rich portfolio of products, understand our customers' need very, very rapidly, design a product or design in a product for them in this case, then increase our capacity and get it to our customers. So again, an example of where we would pride ourselves on being a pandemic-proof supplier to our customers.
And just to be clear, so these tracks, these busways that they're designing, are they static or are these more complicated like you would see maybe in a semiconductor fab where you've got things shuttling overhead?
So these are a dynamic system. So these allow you to clip in different power distribution units. So the U-shaped track is deployed once whenever the facility is built. But then to reconfigure that or to reconfigure the power distribution, you clip in different power distribution modules. And it was focused on a new generation of that power distribution module where we worked with our customer to solve that need.
And how did they know they had a problem? Why didn't they just keep going with what they had?
It was down to size. Increasingly, trying to cram more capability into a smaller environment, they needed a smaller version of this unit. So the existing unit that they had relied on components which were a little bit larger. As an example, the product that we were able to specify here, this Entrelec DBL, is about 50% of the mechanical space compared to other solutions. So really, as they had this tough requirement around a smaller form factor product. Again, another example of miniaturization, perhaps at a larger scale. They were looking for a partner who had a solution that would reduce the size. And also, this particular product is one which reduces the assembly time. So we estimate that DBL reduces assembly time by about 80%. So again, a great example of where we were able to not only reduce the size, understand the customer's requirements, but also allow them to assemble their final products more quickly.
Now, I know you talked about miniaturization as a trend. So was this driven by your customer's customer, so their customer?
Yeah, it was about capability. So, you know, the real estate on the ceiling with the bus bars is already in place. But if you think about these power distribution modules, if you want to cram more of those onto the same space, you require a smaller form factor. So in this instance, this need has been driven by our customer's need, which is to bring in more connectivity and more power distribution into a smaller space. That's a very typical trend and exactly the sort of problems that our customers come to us with as regularly.
That's what it comes down to, right? Is you've got black boxes that require power and connectivity, and you're putting more and more of those, whether at a microscopic scale in terms of sensors or at a macro scale in terms of large robots, you're putting more of those into the factory.
You know, if the trend was take more space and make your products bigger, our life would be a lot easier. But trust me, that's not the way this trend is going. But that's fine. And again, you know, we invest very heavily in making sure that we've got the right sort of technology to be able to respond to what we see as those macro trends. And miniaturization is one that has been around for a long time, and it's one that's not going away. But yeah, good example here of that trend, perhaps at a slightly larger scale.
What would be your key takeaway for somebody listening to this, for everything that we've talked about? What urgency or what message do you want to impart upon our listeners who might be out there, who might be represent a potential customer, somebody in this value chain?
I think, Chad, you started at the start of this conversation by saying, we're a large company that you may not know. When I think about that, We are such a critical part of so many of our customers' solutions. You know, I do think as customers and machine designers and operators, manufacturers think about the future, our needs for connectivity are going to continue to evolve and continue to grow. Our customers need smarter products. They need faster connectivity. They need more power. Those are exactly the trends that we are here responding to on a regular basis. So we're happy to hear our customers' challenges. We're very happy to work with them. And please, if you have a tough connectivity solution, please get in touch.
And how might they do that?
Visit us at our website at te.com, and there you'll find ways to contact us.
All right, Davey, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Sid. Great speaking to you today, Chad. Thank you.